There's three wraps, it's all rise. Thank everybody for coming to Senate Finance this morning, and certainly appreciate the indulgence while we have a little late start. We do have a power outage going on in and around with State Office Building and other glitches we're dealing with. Today is May 4th, 2007. It's around 9:23 a.m. With me is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Dyson, Senator Thomas, and Senator Elton, and myself, Senator Stedman. We're going to hear two bills today, but I'm going to reverse the order. The first one, we're going to take HB 215, Task Force on Counsel and Domestic Violence. And then we're going to go to SB 111, which is the Kodiak Cape public use area. We're reversing that order because the Senate Finance Committee is warm and friendly and can do everything they can to facilitate our colleagues in the other body. The intent is to go ahead and move this bill today. And with us today to present the bill is Representative Anna Faircloth, if she can come forward and go ahead and walk through the bill.
Good morning, co-chairs and committee members. For the record, my name is Representative Anna Faircloth. Before you today is a CS for House Bill 215 that creates a task force to review the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Section 1 talks about the distinction, unfortunately, of Alaska for the last 20 years of being number one in our nation for rape and always in the top five for 27 out of the last 27 years for rape. We have an increasing problem with domestic violence, sexual assault, and interpersonal violence in our state. This is an opportunity to bring together legislative bodies to look at how the council is functioning now and what we can do to address interpersonal violence in our state. This bill has the support of the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, as well as the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. If you turn to page 3 of the bill, there are 7 distinct areas that have been raised in either audits or in either the Senate or the House over the last decade as issues that are continued concerns. And every time the council comes up for reauthorizations, these issues are brought to the forefront, and there is talk of not reauthorizing the council and pointing to different ways that the council is not meeting their statutory goals. The council, in my opinion, is overburdened with over 30 recommendations of what they have to comply to. And I think today is an opportunity to move forward and streamline what they do for Alaska and look at responding to crisis intervention, but also starting to look at how we might prevent or change the way that society looks at interpersonal violence. With that, I'm happy to take questions.
Do we have any initial questions from the committee members? Senator Thomas and Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think a review is probably necessary, since it seems that ever since the inception of the council, that hasn't had much impact at all on statistics anyhow. Maybe it's had some other effect, but anyhow, so I'm glad you're doing that. I'm a little curious, however, about the number. It seems that the more people you get involved in a task force, and maybe it's necessary because I see who they are and where they come from, but 15 is a fairly large, maybe unwieldy number, but you explain to me a little how you developed that number.
Absolutely. I met with the Council on Domestic Violence, their executive director, as well as the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence that represents 21 programs. Currently, the selection process that we agreed to jointly, and that is myself and the two executive directors, and I believe that they went back to their membership, the 21 providers across the state, to bring together who's currently on the council that is aware of the issues and how they're addressed. So if you look at public safety currently has a position on the council, so can look sort of in the rearview mirror and bring what's looking forward, but they're also who's going to respond in the future to domestic violence and sexual assault. So they need a foot at the table, a seat at the table. The Department of Law prosecutes, and so that's how it was established. The new person on this council that isn't currently serving on the council is the Department of Corrections. And so we brought the current council members together. We made ex officio the executive director so that there was not too much bias in the vote. That was our thought process. but believed that they needed to have the perspective from victim services represented by the Alaska Network and from the administration side of the house, because some of the criticism has been that the grants haven't been managed appropriately or that there's internal turnover. And so these are the people that have direct affiliation with the criticisms that have been brought out and the people that can help us bring positive solutions to the table.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Any other initial questions? Senator Elman.
Thank you, and thanks, Representative. I mean, I think it's a good idea to take a look at what has happened in the past, especially given some of the audits. The one thing that is not on your list that kind of concerns me is the audit has talked about conflicts of interest in terms of having people who are going to benefit from decisions made by the council, and that has often been in terms of the network. But I don't see anything in here that addresses a concern that I have, actually two concerns. One is the number of state personnel who serve on the council, and the other is having representatives from departments who also benefit from the dollars distributed by the council. Am I missing something, or does one of your list of seven get to that issue?
We're halfway there on line 11, number 3. The appointment process of the council was specific to the audit criticism that the Alaska Network submits names to the governor, and so that was what that was intended to cover. As far as the state personnel and the balance on those, that's the decision of a legislative body, and so I think that that occurs as we go through all of the conversations. If I am successful in being able to gain your support in both bodies and bring this to fruition, I hope that I'll be appointed, and very humbly, I hope that I can be the facilitator, because I really don't want to have a vote, because I don't want someone to see my past service in victim advocacy as a negative. I want to very much bring together the people who have to work on these issues and the people that direct the money to make sure that we can find a balance that's appropriate. And what this legislation for me is intended to do is to be able to provide that network across the state to those 21 programs, but find additional a funding stream or an additional way to look at society change and education on the prevention side. So I think we get to where you want to be, Senator Elton, but I'm open for discussion. I have concurrence of many members of my body, as well as the two affected organizations with what we have today. I'm not opposed to looking at the balance of people who are employed by the state on the council. We have talked about that before, and I actually served on a committee, just for your information, that was totally representative or had a larger balance in the private sector. That committee was not very functional when I served on it.
Senator Elton, you have a follow-up?
I do. A follow-up and then another question, Mr. Chair. I appreciate what you said, but when I read line 11, it says the appointment process. It doesn't say anything about who, I can't find anything about who shall be appointed or who shall serve.
For the record, I'm happy to say that the intent, if I serve on that body, is to address the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault's ability to move forward to the governor a recommendation. I understand that's a legislative audit finding, and that was what that line was intended to do. If it doesn't, I'm happy to look at an amendment that clarifies it.
Yeah, another question. I have been involved in these discussions subsequent, I think, to the first audit, and I can't remember if it was 2002, but have had a very large interest in the issue. But never once has the issue, when I've been talking about it, has the issue on line 12 been, page 3, been brought up, which is the geographic location of the council's office. And perhaps you can tell us why you think it's important enough to have in this list.
Certainly. Thank you for asking. It came from my side of the house. as an interest in the issue of turnover as it was listed in the audit. And there was an allegation. I am not sitting here today telling you it's a substantiated allegation, but that because the executive director position has turned over multiple times, are we drawing from the right employment pool? I stand here before you today, or sit here before you today, to tell you that I think it is the right location. But I think that we can't be afraid to talk about red herrings that other people might want to throw into the mix. If I'm successful, I believe the location is appropriate in Juneau. I believe that the Alaska Network of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is in Juneau, that the heart of the state is in Juneau as far as legislative action goes, and so it is appropriate for the council to be there. But I have members in my body that have questioned the turnover rate and why that's happening, and the executive director position most specifically. So it's in here because it was a concern that was raised in my body, and I'm not afraid to take on being able to support what I believe is right in a particular issue, and I know that you're not either. And it's certainly by no means me wanting to move anyone or any employment away from Juneau, but it's an issue that was raised with me in the House. I'm not sure if it was raised on the floor, but I'm not afraid to take on any issue because I know that the council is trying to do the right thing with the resources that they have available.
Then we'll go to Senator Hoffman.
Yeah, kind of tied to that issue is maybe a short discussion by the sponsor on line 8, page 3. It says the task force shall consider and develop recommendations and address. Do you see that as that kind of a mandate? Do you see that as precluding discussions on other issues that may be out there and being used by some who may prefer the status quo? Being used by some to say, well, this isn't part of our purview because it says we shall do this instead.
Thank you, Senator Elton. I don't see it as confining. My goal is to take on the hard issues that are in the audit and make sure that we bring back in a way that will be supported in both bodies. The reason, going to Senator Thomas's question on why the committee is so big, why the task force, is that I wanted buy-in from the Senate so that any recommendations that were brought forward would have advocates in the crowd that could talk from both sides, those in opposition to the recommendation and for, and so that we could have a healthy debate in both houses and bring changes forward that were good and not status quo. Because as Senator Thomas said, we've been doing the same thing for at least a decade, if not two, and the programs are working with limited resources that are being eroded every day with cost of inflation. We're not increasing those programs, and so I think we need to look outside of the box, and I want it to be a bit uncomfortable. That's the only way we're going to do something a little bit differently. And I think with your help, or with three members of the Senate and three members of the House that have different opinions and different ideas, that we can have a healthy discussion. And with those that have already been involved in the process, hearing what they have to say, bring forward something that will take this state in a direction to really start turning the tide on interpersonal violence. I'm sorry, I'm on my soapbox.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see the findings on page one, and I agree with them, but the one thing that it doesn't state is the magnitude of the problem in rural areas of the state. And I don't see in your considerations for developing recommendations the possibility of reallocation of existing dollars to put them where the magnitude of the problem in the state of Alaska is, as well as what you already alluded to, the diminishing amount of resources that the state is spending. All of the points that you have here, I think, are important, but they pale in comparison to how the dollars get distributed and how much is being allocated to address the problem. You know, I think that those issues potentially far outweigh many of the items that you list on page 3, lines 8 through 15. And I know in our area there is a problem, and it has been focused in by newspapers and other agencies in the state of Alaska. and I wonder if you might comment upon why that isn't addressed in as an item in the task force recommendations to look at and to make recommendations to the legislature.
Senator Hoffman, your point is right on. Alaska Native women specifically are disproportionately overrepresented in a population for rape. I'm not sure that that's the case and can't speak to it specifically with domestic violence. But the issue of funding allocation, I don't know that I can bring consensus to. I think that it's valid. If you have anything to offer me on what you'd like us to consider on a line, I'm happy to consider that. The resources are limited that the council has worked with. The council has a representative from rural Alaska that is very influential in the funding process I've set before them before. Rural Alaska is given deference to understanding at a council level how difficult it is to deliver services in that area. But and it's not an appropriate but inside the city of Fairbanks, you are more likely to be raped than anywhere else in our nation. Inside of Anchorage, you fall to number 6, I believe, on the list for the last accounting records. And so we have a higher level of population in those areas that report the crime. And I don't want to defend the funding allocations. You're absolutely right. More resources need to go to rural Alaska. But the challenge for the council is the limited resources are there and trying to keep the lights on in the shelters across the state. So I'm happy to take on consideration of funding. That's why I wanted to look at grants and grants management. I believe the council is leaving a lot of money on the table at a nationwide level, specifically with the Center for Disease Control and looking at bringing education dollars and prevention dollars into our state. But I'm unsure, as a task force, I was trying to get the framework together to go forward, and the funding allocation wasn't something that I was going to take on. We certainly could take it up as a committee and look at, and it's certainly underfunded, Senator Hoffman.
You have a follow-up, Senator Hoffman?
But on line 6, you talk about just compliance of grants management. It doesn't say allocation of grants. And I think that is the issue that gives me some concern that needs to be looked at as well in light of the problem in the state of Alaska.
Senator Hoffman, as a task force, I'm not sure we can bring more money to the table, but we certainly can ask the council to be managed and formed in a way that provides the opportunity so more money can come to Alaska and to rural Alaska. I'm happy to consider an amendment to look at that. The things that were agreed to with the council and the network were issues that I believe that I could bring to the Senate and to the House with a list of criteria that you could look at to say that this is why we support doing things this way. The funding issue will get politicized, I believe, and is more difficult, but not inappropriate for us to take up. I'm happy to look at making recommendations on the allocation. I just think that that may expand the conversation further than I can provide success for you in 1 year. And my framework was that I believe, as a facilitator and someone who wants to move this process forward, that the 7 areas that I could look into, I could provide success in. I'm happy to try to provide success in funding. I just don't know. I don't know if I can get there.
Well, my closing comments are, you alluded to addressing hard issues, and many of them that you listed, and the allocation issue probably is one of the hardest, and that is not being addressed.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Dyson. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think all of the comments that have come up here at the table are valid. I'm just concerned about where we're at in our schedule this year. And so my question to the representative is not about the validity of any of the issues that come up. If we don't get this passed this year, what, if anything, will be the detrimental effect of that?
I think that reauthorization will come up again, and that we'll have the same fight that we always have, and that we'll reauthorize for a shorter period of time because we will say that the council has not reacted how each body or each individual representative of our state believe that they should do. I think that it's important to move this legislation forward. I believe it has a small fiscal note for the return that we could get to have both bodies bought into a process. I believe if we have both bodies brought into the process that we can do what Senator Hoffman says and look at addressing the funding issue. But if we can't get both bodies recognizing that we have a problem and that we need to address it and bring them to an education level in 1 year so that we that are educated on the issue can fight the issue out on the floor and make sure we go the right direction, then I think the state loses and again we wait for another 2 years. The reason I'm pushing so hard right now at the end of session is because I believe that there is an education level. We lost 25% of the brain power in the House. And so all of those new individuals are having to be brought on and educated about the issues that affect the state from many different areas. If we could contain that and bring this forward with the same education level, we won't have to start at ground zero coming back as each body turns new members into it. And so there's always an additional education process. And so I think that we're ahead of the curve right now to go forward in 2007 and make those determinations so that we can talk about them when we come back into session in 2008.
Follow up, Senator Dyson, then we'll go to Senator Elton and Senator Thomas.
When's the next reauthorization date?
I think it's 2010.
All right. So what you're doing here is trying to empower and direct the council to get after dealing with a whole bunch of the issues that have not been adequately dealt with, and you're wanting to get them to get going on it sooner rather than later. Is there anything that precludes them from getting going on these things if this doesn't get through both houses?
The issue for me is that they will not have buy-in from the political body that reauthorizes them, and the point of this task force is to bring both bodies together so that we can be advocates for them to do the right thing.
All right, so thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Earl.
Another question, and thanks for your patience. Out of a 15-member task force, I mean, we don't have anybody that represents the clients of the services that are provided. Is there a reason for that? These are all people that deliver services.
There are two people appointed by the governor from the private sector.
But
I would guess that they would be from the victim side of the house, and one is designated that needs to be from a community that's smaller, of rural representation, and one is from urban representation.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair, I looked at that, and it's lines 23 through 26 on page 2. But it specifically says two members appointed by the governor who are citizens involved with or who have a history of involvement in the delivery of services to victims. It doesn't say the acceptance of services.
Good point, Senator Elton. Our intention is that it can be a victim or someone that receives services also. That is the agreement. Chris Ashenbrenner is in the audience. We believe that it can be both. Usually people that are working in the field unfortunately have had a personal experience. A large majority of the people that I've worked with have had, but it's not meant to preclude a victim of sexual or domestic violence from being on the council.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the reauthorization date is 2011. Just
maybe that's helpful.
And I hope that you intend to interview, if possible, any and all of those executive directors that have served in the past. They may be helpful. Maybe you've already done that, and that's what's led to some of the concern. But if not, I hope that's part of the program anyhow. Not really a question, I guess. Just a statement.
We're happy to take input from anyone.
When we look, Senator Olson, you have a question?
Yes, I do. Mr. Chairman, thank you. As we look at the report that's due on March 1st and the repealing of the act on April 16th, what happens if the report is not in on time?
Well,
what are the backup plans, I guess?
Well, we're going to accomplish the goal.
You are.
The backup plan just means that the council goes away. If the report's in process, we'd still bring it forward.
Okay.
The whole point was to get it off the books, per se, as far as editing and and putting it in statutes to stay forever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We have several fiscal notes. There are only two that have a fiscal impact. One, the Council of Domestic Violence is for $8,000, and one for the Department of Corrections for $3 million. Do you have any comments on the fiscal notes you'd like to make? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal notes, each department has agreed to internalize the cost of travel. The Department of Public Safety, so that we don't penalize the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, so that victim service programs would be jeopardized, has agreed to take those costs and provide the transportation costs for the executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and the two people that would be from the public. So with that, I think that's there is some travel costs involved in bringing everyone together.
Sounds like we may want to come back to this in a year and look at some of these costs with the impacts that have been, or the issues that have been brought forward by Senator Hoffman. I would expect, you know, the travel out into the more remoter parts of Alaska away from the population centers are going to substantially push up that cost.
For this legislation, we've said that we would travel to one rural community, and that hasn't been determined yet. I was hopeful that the task force itself would make the recommendation on which rural community we would travel into.
I won't ask you how many rural communities we have.
I understand.
Okay.
This will only establish a framework on direction where we can introduce legislation to address the more specifically the issues. Senator Hoffman is exactly correct. Rural Alaska has challenges that are unique to rural Alaska.
Okay. Do we have any other initial questions from the member? Anybody in the audience that would like to come forward and speak? Seeing none, and we have nobody on the off net or. We have any additional items we want to address here today? Senator Elton.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move an amendment that's I don't have written out, but it's very simple if the chair will accept it. It's on page 3, line 12, to strike line 12 and renumber accordingly. That's the geographic location of the council's office.
And I'll accept that motion and object for discussion. That would be to strike line 12, page 3, geographic location of the council office, which and you want to speak to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess the concern that I have is that these seven items are mandates that the task force shall consider. It doesn't say may consider. I would have much less heartburn, I guess, if we predicated the list with may instead of shall. I have not had any discussion with anybody that suggests that the location of the council's office is any part of a program. It's not been mentioned in any of the audits. It has not been mentioned by any of the clients of the services. This is just a new one to me. And I'll speak just very briefly to a philosophical problem that I have with things like this. I mean, I think an argument can be made that you and I think maybe the sponsor alluded to this in her comments, that you expand the pool of potential applicants. I just have a sensitivity, I guess, to the notion that we hire people and we do it based on the convenience of those people who may be willing to serve. I'm not sure that's that is a threshold issue in the hiring of somebody, and I don't think it's been demonstrated that the location of the office is a problem. So I offer the amendment for those reasons, Mr. Chair.
And the location is?
The location right now is Juneau.
Thank you. Do we have any comments on the amendment?
Well,
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I I think it, we could trust this group to have a rational and fair discussion about it, and they have expertise and a perspective that I'm not sure we have, and so I will object to the amendment, only in order to leave that with the purview of the people who are working the problem around the state.
I'll go ahead and remove my objection, and then you can make your objection, and you'll have the objection.
Yeah, I object.
Thank you. We have objection to the amendment. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask the sponsor of the amendment, as you look at the distribution of the, or where the office is at, and the problem that's especially, as was pointed out by the sponsor of the bill, throughout the state of Alaska, it would almost seem like if you had a more centralized executive office that was there to address it, you'd have better coverage and certainly a greater sensitivity of what's of some of the issues that are you know, 1,000 miles away from Juneau.
Through the chair, I mean, I think it's in many cases that's a legitimate observation. In this case, the council's function is bureaucratic, and operating within the bureaucracy. I mean, the members of the council right now are, I'm not using the term bureaucrats in any kind of a pejorative sense, but they're government officials, public servants, who are making a decision on the allocation of dollars, and so that's not a service delivery directly to clients. It is a function that is made by people, most of whom are already located here in Juneau.
One last question, Mr. Chairman. And you look at the fiscal note there, a lot of that has to do with travel, and it seems like if you're going to be traveling throughout the state of Alaska, or cut down on the fiscal note, a central location might cut down on the expenses that are related to that. Is it a significant consideration?
Well, my short response to that.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
Is that the fiscal notes reflect travel for the task force and not for the council. And so, I mean, I think, I don't think the inclusion or the non-inclusion of this item from the list is going to affect the fiscal notes at all. In fact, the bill itself is kind of what leads to the fiscal notes. It says there will be 4 meetings held around the state. But that's not council meetings, that's task force meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is the motion still maintained, or the objection?
Yes.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Senator Thomas?
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Elton?
Yes.
Senator Huggins? Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
No.
4-2-nay.
We have a brief at ease. Outcome of the amendment vote?
The amendment was adopted.
Okay, the amendment was adopted. We will, any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we pass out CS for House Bill 215 as amended, with accompanying fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
We have a motion on the table to move the bill.
Just to object for a comment.
Okay, objection.
I just want to thank the sponsor for this. I have been involved in trying to work through some of these issues for a long period of time. I'm glad that you've codified them in a bill, and I think it's important that we move forward. So thanks to the sponsor.
I'll object for a comment as well, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I just want to thank the sponsor as well for bringing it forward, certainly as I've worked in the hospitals and seen people that have come through that have been adversely affected by some of the issues that we discussed here. Definitely in favor of this. With that, I'll withdraw my objection.
Hearing no further objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee as amended with the attached fiscal notes. That will go on to the next bill, which is Senate Bill 111. Kodiak Cape Public Use Area. The intent here is to move the bill unless there's issues that arise that are unexpected. With that, we have Mr. Doug Letch in person from the sponsor's office, if he could.
Yes.
He already has come forward. Mr. Letch, if you could go ahead and present the bill. I've heard this bill in the Resources Committee. But there's several members here that have not heard this bill before.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stevens is was here just a moment ago and should be back too as well. And I know he'd like to say a few words about SB 111. For the record, my name is Doug Letch, staff to Senator Gary Stevens. The bill that you have before you, SB 111, would create the Narrow Cape Public Use Area. This would be a new public use area of 46,000 acres in the Narrow Cape section of Kodiak Island, which if any of you have ever been out there, it's one of the places that you can get to on the limited road system that we do have in Kodiak. It's the end of the road. There should be some maps in your package or your packets too that give you an idea of where we're talking about, although it doesn't really give you the full look of how it is in Kodiak Island unless you look down at that little section down there that's highlighted in yellow. This is an area that's a very important public use area right now. There's a wide range of activities down there, from beach combing to rocket launch activity with the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation. There's buffalo ranches. There's a beautiful beach called Fossil Beach, where you can stroll along the beach and find the embedded in the cliffs all sorts of fossils dating back eons. There's also surfing down there. There's just about anything you could think of on Kodiak Island you could do down in that area. So it's a very important area to Kodiak. And the idea of this bill is to create this public use area in statute to preserve what's already there, and to also bring back to the legislature any movement by the state to sell this area, which would allow the legislature to have the opportunity to get involved in that. And the reason why this is very important to Kodiak is you may remember a few years ago, probably about 2 or 3 years ago, there was the University Lands Bill that came before us in the previous legislature. And one of the parcels that was in that was the Narrow Cape area, and that got the attention of everybody in Kodiak. So that's one of the things that this bill would do, where the impetus of this bill came from. One of the things this would do is make sure that you folks knew that and approved that any attempt to dispose of this land. The bill won't stop anything that's there already. The bill won't curtail the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation from continuing their efforts and allows for their expansion. We've worked extensively with the Department of Natural Resources. The Kodiak Island Borough has also been very involved in this. We have support from the City of Kodiak, the Kodiak Island Borough. The Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation supports the bill. The department supports the bill. There's a zero fiscal note. And I know Senator Dyson was down there, I think, for the first launch at the Rocket Launch Complex and knows what that area fairly well. So it's a good bill. I think everybody that sat on resources who heard the bill understood what we were trying to get at. And I know Senator Huggins was there as well as you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stevens is also here as well.
Senator Stevens, do you support this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, indeed I do, and it's a good bill, and well supported by the people of Kodiak, and I appreciate your fitting this in. Just a couple of comments. I'm not sure what all Doug covered, but just to realize that Kodiak, of course, is the largest island in Alaska, the largest island in the continental United States, and precious little public use areas on the island. Two-thirds of it has been devoted to a bear refuge, and this is a very large area of 46,000 acres, and it's about 50 miles away from the city of Kodiak. It's really well used, enormous use of for hiking, for camping, for horseback riding. It's an amazing surfing area as well, and a lot of activities go on out there, and really appreciate your willingness to consider this. There's also a couple of special uses in the area you should be aware of. One is the grazing leases that have been very successful. There's a cattle ranch there, and also a buffalo ranch. Bill Burton, I think you met Bill, he has that ranch, and as well as the rocket launch site is there also. And just to make sure you know that the rockets are not pointed at Sitka, they're pointed away. It's quite safe. This is a very important area for Kodiak because it's so well used, and there are a few other areas nearby that could be used for this. So I appreciate your considering it and be glad to try to answer any questions you may have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Dyson and then Senator Thomas.
Yeah, thank you. My questions have been answered.
Okay, thank you. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we need to delineate the other areas that the rockets are not?
I can promise you they're not pointed at any of you.
There you go. Can you explain on page 3 what lines 15 through 21 actually mean? I realize at least it's the intention is not to stop any activity that takes place, but obviously something must have indicated that there are some that are incompatible. So what is the result of this language? What does this do to those incompatible areas or activities?
Mr. Chairman, again for the record, Doug Letch, staff to Senator Stevens. Senator Thomas, I believe the person that may be best able to answer your question is Dick Milius, who is the Director of Division and Mining, Land and Water. He should be on the off-net site this morning to answer that question.
Mr. Milius, are you online? There's a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am online.
You could introduce yourself and who you represent for the record, and go ahead and answer the question, and if you'd like the question repeated, just ask.
Okay, Senator Stedman and members of the committee, my name for the record is Dick Milius, and I'm the Director of the Department of Natural Resources Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And the answer to the question to the chair is that at this point, we actually are not aware of any incompatible uses within the area. And in the future, there could be, though, as there's more public use of the lands and potential for conflict. And one of the provisions that's in the legislation is that DNR in the future could do a management plan for this area that would deal with some of those conflicts, determine what uses might be incompatible, and how to resolve those conflicts. So like I said, at this point, we don't see a need for that. We recently completed the Kodiak Area Plan, which gives direction for how the state land in this area will be managed, and this legislation is consistent with what's in that. One of the reasons why this bill is before the Finance Committee was that the original language of the bill required us to do that management plan, and it was changed in resources to make that optional. And at this point, like I say, because we don't see the level of conflict being sufficient, we would not do a management plan and would not address the incompatibility issues at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Milius. Do we have any other questions from the...
No, that was the answer I was looking for.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who's going to go ahead and maintain this area after the... who's going to maintain the area?
Actually, I think Mr. Milius could respond to that quite well as well, Senator.
Okay.
Mr. Milius, do you want to respond to who's going to maintain this
public use
acreage?
Area.
Public use area.
Yes, through the chair. It would continue to be managed by the Department of Natural Resources Division of Mining, Land, and Water, just as it is today. This doesn't change our management or who manages it. The main thing that the bill does is it assures that it will stay in public ownership and it can't be disposed of, it, as was mentioned, without legislative approval.
We do have zero fiscal notes, which is, a good topic to bring up right now, which is kind of nice to see. Zeros instead of other larger numbers. Any other initial questions? Senator Olson.
Last question has to do with how many private property owners are out there on the stretch of road that we're affecting by this public use area?
I don't believe there are any private property owners in the area. Doug, would that be true?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I believe the only property owners out there in the state of Alaska, and also the leaseholding that Mr. Burton who is a buffalo rancher, there has in the in that activity out there. He does have some grazing rights through the state, and I believe his land is federal government land that he has leased, but Mr. Milius may have the answer to that as well.
Mr. Milius, do you have an answer to the
federal lease acreage? Yes, Senator, there is one private property owner within the boundaries of the public use area, and that is Mr. Burton, the rancher. He has a 160-acre parcel that he acquired through the federal government. And if you look on your map there, it shows up as by that airstrip that's just north of the rocket launch facility. And by the definition of what's included in the public use area, that would be an in-holding and not be subject to the actual legislation. The legislation only applies to the state-owned land.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 1, line 15, it talks about the commissioner's responsibility, 14 and 15, responsibility for the management of the surface and subsurface estate. Under a public use area, what would the subsurface management be? Would that include, exclude exploration and mining?
Senator Hoffman, to the chair, correct. The area is actually open to mining, so you could stake mining claims and could explore those claims, and if you found something, develop them, and it could be leased for oil and gas. We do not believe the area has much potential for minerals, and nobody's identified any potential for oil and gas within the area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Okay, with that, let's go to Jerome Shelby, Mayor Kodiak Island. Borough, Mr. Mayor Shelby, if you're online, could you please respond to the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thanks for hearing the bill today. This is an important bill for Kodiak, and it's primarily because if you look at the Kodiak road system, a map of it, most of the land on the road system that's adjacent to the road is privately owned. So this becomes the only significant portion of land that's publicly owned that's available for public recreation, and that tells you why this is a heavily used public recreational area. A couple of other things that contribute to that is that the road between Kodiak and this area is being paved. There's about a 7-mile stretch left that they're working on paving right now, and then it will be paved all the way. And the other thing is the adjacent availability of different types of recreational opportunities once you get to this parcel of land. You have a significant salmon river that's there that gets heavily used in the summer for salmon fishing. You have beachcombing opportunities. You have the only surfing beach on Kodiak Island available there. You do have lots of opportunity for berry picking, hiking, all sorts of different types of recreational activities. And because of the fact that the road runs through the entire length of this property, you can spread people out. You can accommodate a number of people without, and you still feel like you're kind of out there pretty much by yourself. You seldom run into other folks unless you're down fishing, of course. When fishing is at its peak, then you definitely will see other people. But this is very valuable from that perspective, and all we're really asking is that you folks recognize it's an important recreational area and up to the bar, if you will, that, you know, we found out about the proposed transfer of the University of Alaska by reading about it in the newspaper. And so we would appreciate if you folks would put this through. What that does is that means that if other uses become important, and that there will be at least a public discussion of that at you folks' level before any other use is decided to be important enough to chip a chunk of this off or do something different. And that's what we're looking for as a community, is that there be a public process instead of this reading about in the newspaper that in the dark of the night this land was disposed of somehow by the state of Alaska. So we would appreciate your support on it, and I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay, thank you. Okay, do we have any closing questions or concerns from committee members? Senator Hoffman, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out Senate Bill 111 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion on the table to move the bill. We have objection? Seeing no objection, committee will go ahead and move the bill forward. I'd like to thank Senator Stevens for coming forward and being patient as we worked this bill through the system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We are going to have an at ease until 1:30. We'll just recess till 1:30. It may be we'll start promptly at 1:30. We'll do a little bit of work. We may have to have another recess depending on what's going on over in the SOB building with the power outage if the printing is caught up with the clock. With that, we are in recess till 1:30.